Buongiorno, this is H.G. Wells, log set S2, log 19. And today I have arrived in the beautiful, bustling Italian port of Genoa, where I am meeting the mother of science fiction, the sublime Gothic novelist, Mary Shelley.
There we are. That should be a little quieter. I tend to keep the window open, as otherwise these old Genoan villas get excessively dark and stuffy, and I do like to hear the sounds of the street outside.
I can see why you would want to let the city in. It is picturesque here. Between the steep mountains and the blue and purple waters of the Ligurian Sea, quite the place to write in.
It is, and I am flattered that you have come so far to see me, both geographically and temporally. I am afraid I am out of tea, shockingly, and it is perhaps a touch early for wine. Will you have coffee? There may also be water from the well. This is not the wealthiest of households, I'm afraid. I and my friends have always found it difficult to live within our means.
Coffee would be fine, with sugar if you have it.
I'm afraid I do not, but there is honey, which we'll have to do. Your time machine is fascinating. I would like to know more about how it works.
Forgive me, Mrs. Shelley, but I would prefer that the workings of my time machine remain a secret. It's not that I don't trust you, but I must take the greatest care with its use.
I see. Very well. Perhaps that is for the best. I cannot say for certain what I would do with such a machine. The temptations would be very great. Never mind, then. Instead, do tell me who else you have visited using it, whose name I might know.
I think only Shakespeare that you would know of. The rest would have been children or not even born before your time. Oh, and Byron, of course.
Ha! That is the expression of a man who has met Byron, who has experienced Byron. Dear Byron, he will be along shortly with another set of poems for me to transcribe for him, and to stay for the evening for lays and limoncello. We read maudlin verse and drink whatever suspicious concoction he has purchased from some unsavoury character at the docks. You should join us, Mr. Wells, all writers together. It's quite all right. Marianne and Lee Hunt have gone out. This is their house. They are kindly letting me stay. Marianne cannot stand Byron, so she is always sure to be elsewhere when he is going to be visiting. They have gone inland, to Milan for a few days.
I entirely understand her dislike. I'd really rather not meet Byron again. He didn't seem to want to take no for an answer.
No interest in men, then, Mr. Wells?
Good heavens!
Come now, if you are from the future, then surely you are aware of our reputation. Myself, my husband, and Byron. I see no reason to pretend we were anything but liberated.
No, I'm well aware. Your reputation succeeds you, as you correctly surmise. And whilst I am quite fond of women, I have little interest in Byron, despite his best efforts.
Ugh, he's incorrigible. Like a stallion perpetually in heat. I hope you were firm with him.
Firmness didn't seem to stop him, so I left. I think he might have set his bear on me out of pettiness for my rebuffing his advances. At least Shakespeare found it funny that I had to exit pursued by a bear. I'm a touch worried I might be the cause of that line now.
I see. How interesting. Well, in that case, I expect him within the half hour, so you may need to make yourself scarce when he arrives.
Thank you. I appreciate the warning. Transcribing Byron's poetry aside, what are you working on at the moment?
Very little, I confess, since the cruel Ligurian Sea took Percy and left me alone with my son. Ugh, this hateful Italy that claimed my children and husband. If it were not for the Lee Hunts and Byron and my little Percy Florence, I might have fallen into despair and ruin entirely. How life has turned to sorrow since those glorious days on Lake Geneva. That wet and ungenial year without a summer, when I first stepped out from childhood into life.
I'm so sorry for your loss. And the world's. What further great works might have come from your husband's pen had he not drowned? I should have thought, and perhaps come to visit you when your grief wasn't so fresh.
No, Mr. Wells. The fact you are here at all tells me that this is a chapter of our lives that has been remembered for decades, which is a small consolation, as is any visit from someone diverting. Besides, Percy's heart is always with me, to give me solace.
That is a lovely sentiment.
Oh, no, it's in my desk drawer. Here, let me fetch it for you.
Goodness me! Is that his actual heart?
It is, and it is what little remains of him. It was necessary to cremate him upon the beach at Viareggio where his body washed up, because of the local laws. There was Byron, Hunt, and Trelawney, who was the designer of the cursed vessel they sailed in, which they could not decide whether to name the Don Juan or Ariel. Trelawney adored Byron, but my husband could not abide to sail in a boat named after his poetry. The three of them fought like squabbling chickens over the parts of him that remained after the cremation, and Hunt insisted upon keeping my husband's heart. All this whilst I and Jane Williams, whose husband also went down with that ship, were far away in our awful little oubliette of a villa on the Bay of Lerici, waiting for any scrap of news. I was forced to beg, Hunt, for my own husband's heart, with the help of Byron. He gave it to me in the end, and I forgive him his cruelty, for I know it was born of grief.
Is that why you're living here, with Lee Hunt and his wife?
Where else should I go? At least I am among those who knew my Percy, and who will give charity to a poor widow and her son. Are you married, Mr. Wells? Do you have children?
I am, and very happy with my Jane, and we have two boys. We are of a similar mind to you and your parents, though. I am her husband, not her owner.
And I am sure the world will judge you for it, as it did us. Cherish those you love, Mr. Wells, for their loss is an agony. I wonder how I shall care for the son who remains with me, for what little money I have is running out. Ah, but surely you will know. You know my future. You can tell me.
I'm sorry, I would rather not. The timeline, the consequences, you see...
But surely, Mr. Wells, you have already affected time itself. You have told me already how you are likely to be the origin of exit pursued by a bear. If you were to cause some cataclysmic event, you should have done so the moment you engaged your machine and went into the past. Therefore, we must surely assume the timeline is fixed. Whatever you do in the past will have already happened.
That's not something I can be certain of.
And yet here you are, taking that chance so you may have a little light conversation with history's greatest authors. Have you been to the future?
I daren't, in case I cause a paradox.
But you go back in time, uncaring of what ant you may step on, what change you might wreak with the lightest tread upon the soil of the past. Man, how ignorant art thou in thy pride of wisdom! You do not stop to think before you interfere with nature, but in your arrogance do not dream that nature may have the means to bring all you do to naught.
Look, I would like to explain the complexities of temporal physics to you, but it's extremely complicated.
No doubt too complicated for my poor female brain to comprehend.
That's not what I said at all.
I think I shall write a book where a plague wipes all humanity from the earth but for a single man, and imagine a world where nature is left to herself without his interference.
Look, perhaps you're right. Perhaps I have already done irreparable damage to time itself. So, I shall not tell you your future, but I will give you some advice. You are clearly not happy here in Italy. Perhaps you
might return to England with your son and stay with your father, reconnect with your family, and write again. There are so many more excellent, if underappreciated, works to come.
Oh? By that I assume that is what I will do? What I am destined to do?
I worry that I have already said too much.
Very well. The thought had crossed my mind anyway to return to England. Only my friends keep me in Italy, and the slow paralysis of grief now I consider it. I have missed the company of my father's set.
Yes, that must have been a curious childhood indeed in the house of William Godwin, surrounded by poets, radicals, and political philosophers.
Father insisted on giving me as good an education as any man, and he tried his best, although it could have been considered a bit patchy. He and I are similar in that vein. We have lofty ideals, but alas, often neither our purses nor the hours in the day are sufficient to live up to them.
My father is similar, intensely intelligent, but never seemed to be able to apply it to earning much when we were young. Except at the cricket. He was an excellent cricketer before injury ended all that. Quite the atheist as well. Drove my mother mad, and put paid to any of her dreams of middle-class respectability, I'm afraid. Poor dear mother, she always tried so hard. No wonder he's outlived her. Oh, but I suppose you never knew your mother. She died just after you were born, didn't she?
I did not, although I often feel as though I did, in truth. Father made sure that I read everything she wrote, so she was able to instruct me from beyond the grave. Her portrait, a particularly beautiful one, hung in my father's study so she could watch over him as he worked. I would often visit her in St. Pancras Churchyard, bring books to read to her. I would read her books, in fact, there in the churchyard, and sometimes it almost felt as if her spirit was there with me, guiding me. Also, it was an excellent place to escape from my stepmother, who I confess I do not like at all. But I am unfair to my father's house. I have always enjoyed the company of my stepsister, Claire, and for the most part it was a good place, and I was well cared for and doted upon by his visitors. Happy times in my youth with Coleridge and Gamp.
Gamp?
Better known as Aaron Burr, former Vice President of the United States of America.
You met Aaron Burr? What is he like?
Oh, yes. He visited my father often while in exile in England, after the business with Hamilton. A warm and kindly man, although that warmth turns to fire quite readily. He adores children, and insisted we call him by his nickname. That was what his daughter and grandson called him, both now passed away, of course. Poor Gamp. I believe he returned to the States some years ago. Or was ejected from England, possibly? Yes, yes, I remember. He was ejected, and Napoleon refused to take him as well. No taste at all, Napoleon. Nothing but a trumped-up Corsican artilleryman. Percy didn't like to speak of his sordid wars. It has always been his opinion that we should remain dispassionate observers of such historical events, so that we can see them with the eye of the writer and the philosopher.
I see. Myself, I prefer to ground what I write in as much credible reality as possible, so that the impossible elements become more plausible.
That is a fascinating piece of trickery.
Yes, I like it. The more impossible the story, the more ordinary must be the setting.
Generally, I think I prefer my settings to be wholly extraordinary. You have reminded me that I should write to Gamp, though, and see how he is. Yes, I believe I shall, once I return to England. It is an excellent idea. On the way, I shall take Percy Florence to see Paris and Versailles and all manner of delights.
Yes, please do. I think you deserve some relaxation after everything you've been through.
When I return, I shall write again and make a living so I may support myself and my son. I have been dependent on the generosity of my friends for altogether too long, and upon the men in my life for longer still.
Will you dispense with men entirely, do you think?
Do you think that would be a shame? Yes, I may well do so. Although I cannot speak for the future, that is, your department. Love or time may make a liar of me. Ah, that will be Byron. Our time draws to a close.
That is a shame. This has been an excellent, if what somewhat dark conversation, but what else should I expect from you, I suppose, Mrs. Shelley?
It has been excellent, and dark, and I thank you for both, and for the advice.
Anon, and do not tarry, dearest Mary. Oh, wallow not in sorrow, tears and woe. For Byron's here with something close to sherry, or possibly is ouzo, I don't know. I understand your being somewhat wary. I'm fairly sure that this one won't explode.
Oh, Mary, dear, he's stuck in Ottaverima again. Awful, vulgar Italian rhyme scheme, but he must insist on working in it. I don't think I can keep him waiting much longer.
One more thing before I go. It's impolite of me, I know, but given all we've discussed so far, I must ask.
Quickly, Mr. Wells, unless you want to meet Byron again.
You mentioned spending time with your mother. Is it true about Shelley and you on your mother's grave?
Oh, Mr. Wells, how deliciously amusing. Yes, let that be the way Percy and I are remembered. Yes. Until the world of men crumbles away into dust.
But you haven't answered the question.
You had best be off, Mr. Wells. Byron will be wondering why I don't come. Coming! Coming! Coming!
All right, this is H.G. Wells, and I will certainly have some regrets if I don't get back to the present before Byron realizes I'm here. Goodbye.
This podcast was brought to you by Turpentine Productions. You can find us on Tumblr at Turpentine Productions, Twitter at Turpentine Pod, and Facebook at H.G. Wells Has His Regrets. Or check out our website, www.hgwellshashisregrets.wordpress.com. This episode of H.G. Wells Has His Regrets was written by Lou Sutcliffe, with story assistance from Francesca Marlord-Ford, and produced by Francesca Marlord-Ford. Music composed by Emily Hancock and Joe Ashkari, and sound design by Howard White. This show was created and executive produced by Emily Hancock. H.G. Wells was voiced by James Carpenter. Mary Shelley was voiced by Bonnie Calderwood Aspinwall. Lord Byron was voiced by Michael Carpenter. This podcast is fictitious, and all characters within are merely fictional interpretations of the people they're based on, and are not to be taken as serious or accurate portrayals. We'll end the episode with a quote from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, or The Modern Prometheus. I do know that, for all the sympathy of one living being, I would make peace with all. I have love in me the likes of which you can scarcely imagine, and rage the likes of which you would not believe. If I cannot satisfy the one, I will indulge the other. Thanks for listening.